This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm Marcy Silman. So, Ross, when I say Operation Paperclip, what do you think of?
You know, I think it was in that movie Office Space. It was some project involving office supplies that got really out of hand.
Yeah, no, that's a very misleading title. Here's an explanation of what Operation Paperclip really is.
Operation Paperclip was a secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to the United States immediately after World War II, and it lasted for about 20 years.
Interesting name for it. That's journalist Annie Jacobson. She's the author of a new book called Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America.
Our colleague David Hyde spoke with Annie Jacobson earlier this week.
Why were these scientists brought to the United States?
Hitler had the best weapons, at least he did in the beginning of the war. And so when the Allied forces were moving across Europe, heading toward Berlin and Munich at the end of the war, different scientific units were assigned to examine the Nazis' laboratories and to see what they had been working on.
What sorts of expertise did these scientists have that the United States wanted?
Well, chemical weapons and biological weapons were at the top of the list. Also, the technology attached to the V-2 rocket. As you remember, in the last months of the war, the Nazis were pummeling European cities with a V-2 rocket, and there was this great fear that something terrible could eventually be transported in the nose cone of that weapon, that something being either a biological agent or a chemical weapon. And it hadn't happened yet. We're talking about now in the last months of the war, but there was an incredible fear that it could.
Annie Jacobson is the author of a new book about Operation Paperclip. This was a post-World War II program that recruited former Nazi scientists to help the U.S. military develop weapons. And I want to zero in on one of the cases you read about in this book. It's about Major General Walter Schreiber. What was his story?
Well, Schreiber was a very nefarious character. He was the Surgeon General of the Third Reich. So you can imagine what he was up to during the war. He was a Nazi ideologue, and he reported to Hitler and also to Himmler and to Goring. He was also in charge of the Reich's vaccine program, which may sound healthy, let's say, but when you think of the idea of biological weapons, as the Nazis were working on, you also have to take into consideration that the Nazis had to create their own vaccine against biological weapons, whatever it was they were going to use. In this case, it was a bubonic plague weapon they were developing. He disappeared after the war. He was captured by the Soviets. And when he reappeared in Berlin, under very unusual circumstances, one would think he would have been arrested. Instead, he was hired under Operation Paperclip.
How did that happen?
Schreiber had testified at the Nuremberg trials against the Nazi high command as a witness for the Soviets, because he was a prisoner of the Soviets. And supposedly he had been indoctrinated by the Soviets to become one of theirs. When he, quote-unquote, defected over to West Berlin from East Berlin under very suspicious circumstances, he went to American military intelligence and he said, "Take me, I'm yours," in essence. And that's exactly what the United States government did. I mean, I found classified documents that show concern among a number of very high-ranking army officials saying, "Wait a minute, can we trust this guy?" He was given a Soviet Starshina rank, which is kind of like a Soviet general rank. Is he really on our side? And there's all kinds of very mysterious paperwork discussing whether or not he was, but in the end, the government decided he was more valuable on our side. And then he was sent to Texas. When I found that out, I have to say, when I found out that Dr. Walter Schreiber, the former Surgeon General of the Third Reich, was living and working in San Antonio, Texas, in the early 1950s. You know, as a journalist, I thought, wow, I've seen lots of things, but that's really something.
How did he end up there?
he was given kind of a elite professorship. So his job was to lecture to military officers on biological weapons. What more he was doing remains classified, but that was at least his public persona.
Annie Jacobson is the author of a new book about a post-World War II program here in the United States that recruited former Nazi scientists, including Major General Walter Schreiber, who had been the Surgeon General in Nazi Germany. He moves to Texas. Did the public become aware of his existence?
Well, here's what happened. Schreiber arrives in the United States to work under this secret contract with the U.S. military, and happens to write a little something in one of the medical journals with his own name. Lo and behold, Dr. Leopold Alexander, far away in Boston at this point, reads this journal and says to himself, "My God, is this the same Major General Dr. Walter Schreiber of the fame at Nuremberg?" And sure enough, he was. And Dr. Leopold Alexander called up the Boston Globe and turned the story into a very big story.
Suddenly, this former Nazi Surgeon General is now, his existence is made public. What happens next?
Well, it's almost unbelievable that the U.S. Air Force comes to Schreiber's defense. They take the line of logic, and remember, this is long before the internet. You can't simply go online and learn about the Nuremberg trials. So if you weren't paying attention to the Nuremberg trials, which were now several years old, you wouldn't know what had gone on there. And so the U.S. Air Force takes the position that Schreiber is innocent, and that all men are innocent until proven guilty, and he's never been proven guilty, therefore he mustn't be guilty. Well, there is so much pushback from Dr. Alexander and his fellow physicians that a real stir is created.
So what ultimately happens? What happens to him, and how does this affect Operation Paperclip?
So if the first coincidence wasn't remarkable enough, here's the second coincidence. At the time, Dr. Leopold Alexander and a colleague of his are offering sort of pro bono medical treatment at the hospital in Boston to European former victims of concentration camp medical experiments. Okay, so in other words, if you had some survivors of these horrific concentration camp experiments who were suffering physically in Europe, they could apply for a kind of grant to come to the United States and be treated at the hospital in Boston. Well, lo and behold, almost at the exact same time that the Schreiber scandal is unfolding and the U.S. Air Force is trying to defend him, one of the victims from the Ravensbrück concentration camp arrives in the United States to be treated, and she recognizes Dr. Walter Schreiber as being the man in charge of the medical murder experiments at Ravensbrück. And the FBI is called into the scene. She identifies him, and now the public becomes irate, and it becomes a classic situation where the U.S. Air Force has to back down because people are so outraged that this man is working for the U.S. military.
Annie Jacobson's new book is Operation Paperclip, about a secret post-World War II program to recruit former Nazi scientists to help develop weapons for the U.S. military. So how does this resolve itself, and how does it affect Operation Paperclip?
Dr. Alexander and a group of physicians in Boston become so incensed that Schreiber isn't hauled off to prison, so to speak, that they actually write a letter to the president demanding that action be taken. And so finally, the U.S. Air Force tells Schreiber that he has to leave, and they help arrange for him to go to, of all places, Argentina. And that is where Schreiber lived out the rest of his life.
I want to just get towards the conclusion here by asking about the bigger picture and what you've learned researching the book and what you think about how this could have happened.
Well, you know, it's a really dark-hearted program, Operation Paperclip, and it raises as many questions as it answers when one is learning about this. But I always think that the truth is its own hero. And so when the truth gets revealed, there's a bittersweet ending to the story. And I certainly felt that as I was researching and reporting the book, and I would come across long classified documents that illustrated the true nature of the program. So I think at the end of the day, the hero here really is the truth.
What do you think the most challenging questions or perhaps answers are that you want readers to take away reading this book, learning about this program for the first time maybe in 2014?
There's a slogan that we hear often, even today, which is, we're doing this in the name of national security. And it's often a line that is used in parallel with, it's why it's classified. This is why you can't know. This is why Congress can't know. This whole idea that the public is somehow too uninformed to handle the truth, I find disturbing. And when you look at a program that's 69 years old now, you have to ask yourself how much, if anything, has really changed.
If you could just take this one step further and tell me what the story of Operation Paperclip means for you personally.
When you consider the idea of how many threats there are that are real, you have to really say to yourself, the government is doing a great job at keeping America safe and secure, certainly when you look at the greater picture of what's going on elsewhere in the world. And so through the long lens of history, it's difficult to say when you look at a program like Paperclip, well, there was nothing good that came of it. We should never have hired Nazis. Because on balance, the Cold War remained cold. But I think the biggest question is, how does morality play into any of this? And is making moral decisions a different set of worms in one's own personal life than it is for people who are involved in national security?
And what conclusion did you reach?
You know, I have to say that the jury is still out, and I don't work in government. I'm very happy to be a journalist because it's easy for me to do my job researching, reporting, and relaying information. And I often wonder about what it's like to be in the shoes of individuals who have to make the kind of decisions that are very gray in terms of moral right and wrong.
Annie Jacobson, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Annie Jacobson, the author of the book Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. She spoke to our esteemed colleague, David Hyde. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. With Marcy Silman, I'm Ross Reynolds.